Chapter 25. Firestorm. On her way to speak with Catty Bree later that day, Ivonel inadvertently intercepted Penelope Harple and Donala Topolino.
"Quite a chance she took with a bairn in her belly,"
Donala remarked after a greeting.
"Are you going to see her, then? I wish she had spoken with me before she went down into that hellish chasm," Penelope added.
Their concerns, and their aiming those fears at Ivonel, were not lost on the drow woman.
"She consulted me, and I begged her not to go," Ivonel replied. "I even offered to go in her place."
"She is quite determined."
"Headstrong," Penelope corrected. "Stubborn as any dwarf I've ever met," Donala insisted. "And as you might know, I've met a few."
"I got her out of there as soon as she needed to be extracted," Ivonel assured them.
"She's a bit warm from the experience we're hearing," Donala said. "You think it worth it?"
Ivonel considered that as they neared Catty Bree's door.
"I do," she decided.
"We had to know, and we learned a lot. More than Catty Bree and the baby are at risk here. If Megara finds its way free, there won't be much left of Gontalgrim or anyone in here."
"And you think that Catty going down into that pit might help prevent that?" Penelope asked.
Ivonel paused a moment, then nodded.
"She gained insight. She has an idea, so she claims. That's why I'm here." She looked from one woman to the other. "And you?" "Just checking on her," Donala answered, moving up to the door.
"But we heard that she might have some trick formulating," Penelope conceded. And she and Ivonel joined Donala, who had paused. Before Ivonel could ask about that, she understood, for here, close, they could hear the sobs coming from inside the room.
"Every night," Penelope quietly explained.
"Perhaps we should go," and she turned away.
"No,"
Donala surprised her by saying.
"She's trying to be strong for everyone, and so taking it all on herself."
The halfling shook her head resolutely.
"I'm not for letting that happen."
Donala pushed through the door, and after a quick exchange of glances, Penelope and Ivonel followed her in. Catty Bree was crying indeed, but as soon as she noted the intruders, she sucked in her breath. Donala went for her with arms wide, but Catty Bree held up her hand and managed to say,
"Don't."
"But my friend," Catty Bree shook her head, her jaw clenched as she held back further sobs.
If I touch you, then you'll melt, I know," Donala said. "But I can't stand seeing you."
She stopped when Penelope rushed past her, moving aside Catty Bree's upraised hand, and wrapped the woman in a great hug. Immediately, as Donala had just predicted, Catty Bree melted into great sobs, her shoulders shuddering, tears pouring down her face. Donala joined in the hug, and even Ivonel, so unsure of her place here, moved closer and put a comforting hand on Catty Bree's shoulder.
"You'll be strong," Penelope whispered to the woman. "You are strong, but get it out now. You've been dealt a bad hand, my love. Nothing fair about it."
Rarely in her young life had Ivonel felt so uncomfortable or so out of place. She wanted to be a part of this. She felt all the sympathy Donala and Penelope were showing to the woman, and indeed felt in her very pores the pain exuding from Catty Bree. The woman had lost her beloved, and indeed, part of the reason Ivonel had come to care so much for this human woman was because she, too, had felt the love between her and Drizzt. Early on, Ivonel had found Drizzt quite attractive and interesting, and had even fancied that she might become his partner at some point. But once she had seen Drizzt with Catty Bree, she knew that her desires would certainly have to wait. There was something so tangible between them, so intermeshed and beautiful, that in a very atypical stance for a drow, Ivonel hadn't even tried to interrupt that and instead celebrated it. The emotion between them was so foreign to her, but not entirely, she knew, though she had to look far, far back in the memories of her namesake to better understand it. So, too, with this encounter.
The shared hug. What drow would do that?
None, Ivanel knew. Nor would any cry over a lost lover, replacing tears with sneers and growls of revenge. And that, Ivanel understood in that very moment, was the weakness. Not of these people, nay, but of the drow. Gatti Bree soon settled, Dinala and then Penelope pulling back from her. Ivanel removed her hand from the woman's shoulder, but Gatti Bree caught it with her own. As she held Ivanel's gaze, Gatti Bree offered a little nod of gratitude. Now composed, Gatti Bree took a deep and steadying breath.
We're here for whatever you're needing, Penelope said to her.
I'm just being silly, Gatti Bree said, and it sounded ridiculous to them all, even to Gatti Bree.
How is Regis? She quickly asked Dinala. Madder than I ever knew he could be, she replied. He says he knows, though, after his own journey to the afterlife, and that's keeping him.
Gatti Bree nodded and managed to smile, but she didn't seem as convinced, Ivanel thought.
I'm just crying for my own loss, not for Drizzt, Gatti Bree said. She paused. There's divine justice, I know, and none are more deserving of heaven than my love.
The conversation went on from there, and despite the urgency of their mission regarding Megara, whatever it might be that Gatti Bree had thought of, Ivanel didn't interrupt. She just listened to the banter, sharing memories of Drizzt, sharing hopes for the child, Dinala and Penelope promising they'd be there every step of the way to help her with the babe.
Yes, Ivanel waited and listened, and patience wasn't at play here. She didn't want it to end. This simple moment of shared pain and shared love and shared hope so suddenly seemed more important to her.
This she understood, finally and fully, was what they were fighting for. It was what Drizzt had sacrificed himself to preserve. It was worth it, the drow decided.
You can't be thinking this will work, Brunner said, hands on hips, as Ivanel and Gatti Bree went over their final plans, revealing the desperate ploy. The Dwarf King shook his head. Preparations had been going on for days, but Brunner still couldn't seem to believe in the plan.
But we do, Ivanel told him. The drow are formidable even without the press here. We can't simply hunker and hold ground.
Hold ground? Brunner asked. We've been given ground as ye asked.
We'll push them back, Gatti Bree assured him.
Aye, we,
Athrogate interjected and held up his fist. The dwarf, full of anger, raving vengeance for his dear lost ambergris, had never stopped arguing against the plan.
We, dwarves and halflings, he looked to Regis and Dinala, and even some stinking drow elves. What's making ye think we're needin'?
If you stay quiet, you can hear the baying of dog-like demons, Ivanel stopped him. They are near, too near. Even aside from this fighting, all of Menzo Baranzon has risen now, and if those drow forces become one fist, they will be near enough to us for the matrons to strike with their magic.
Athrogate's shoulders slumped.
We're going to push them back. All the way back, Gatti Bree told him, told them. But we need to do this first for it to work.
I want the entry cavern, Brunner said with the same conviction as his daughter. Let's see them fight through it. When we know they're coming.
Then we are agreed?
Brunner looked to Dinala and Regis, then to his queens, Fist and Fury. All nodded their agreement.
You've no choice anyway, Gatti Bree said, drawing a scowl from her father. You've felt the rumbling, eh? The ground's been shaking beneath your feet because the beast is getting restless and the magic is fast fading. The water elementals diminishing and longing for their home. We've got to do this, or we'll all be riding a volcano soon enough.
This'll stop it? Brunner asked.
Gatti Bree looked to Ivanel, and the two of them could only shrug.
It's the best idea we've got, Gatti Bree said. both against our enemies and to take the urgency from the primordial.
Then it'll have to work,
Brunner declared, as if being king meant he could proclaim such a thing and make it so. He stepped back from the huddle and began barking orders to his under-commanders, including his battle-seasoned queens. Word spread fast for final preparations in the assigned tunnels and for locking down those which would not be used. Blacksmiths took their positions in the forge room, putting on their heavy gloves to man the great valves controlling the forges, particularly the great forge itself. Other smiths and engineers collected the many bellows from the forges that would not be needed, gathering them and speeding away to their determined destinations. A third group, warriors all, including the gutbusters, scrambled into the kitchens to collect even more baskets of wood chips, then went out to meet the dwarves carrying the bellows.
Bellows? You're sure?
Brunner asked Catti Bree as the teams went about their work, moving with such precision and discipline that it bolstered the hopes of all defenders. The strength of Gontalgrim, of Clan Battlehammer, of Delzoon dwarves in general, lay in their dedication to the common good. They each accepted their role and stayed within it, trusting in the dwarves on either side to do the same, to do their job.
We're sure, Ivanel answered. She tapped her finger on the determined spots on the map of Gontalgrim spread before them. Put a dozen dwarves in a circular pool of water and have them walk the perimeter in the same direction. Then try to reverse your step and you'll find the current overwhelming. Close these doors, open these as we planned. Channel our enemies against the hot winds, channel our unexpected allies with the winds at their back and fuel running before them. Whoosh, Catti Bree added with an evil little smile, one Brunner knew all too well.
Ye think this all up, did ye?
Brunner asked Ivanel.
The drow pointed to Catti Bree. She did, all of it.
Whoosh, Catti Bree said.
Aye, whoosh,
the dwarf king echoed, shaking his hairy head. A short while later, after word came back from the readied positions, Catti Bree moved before the great forge. She felt the ring on her finger connecting her to the plane of fire. She felt the rush of heat, welcoming heat this time, as the furnace door was cranked open. Catti Bree stared into the hot white-orange flames within, a tendril of Megara, like one of the primordial's fiery fingers poking at her. She tore her gaze away and nodded to the dwarves working the main valves behind the furnace, then fell through the power of the ring as they opened them wider. The woman called to the primordial, bidding it to come forth. Catti Bree heard clearly the song of the fire, the voice of living sentient beings forming within that heat. A gout of flame shot from the furnace, roaring out and roiling in the air. On a nod from Catti Bree, then a motion from Ivanel, the dwarf working the oven shut the door, cutting off the source of fiery energy. The roiling ball of flame, already out of the furnace, did not wink away, though, but continued to burn, falling to the floor before the forge, taking shape, becoming bipedal, a living being like a giant, flame-shrouded bear. It was a piece of Megara. Or it had been, for now it was its own entity, as if cutting this tendril from the energy of the primordial had given birth, and now the progeny stood independently. Catti Bree heard the new elemental's name. She couldn't pronounce it, but she could think it, and that was all she needed to coax control of the fiery beast. She waited for the signal from the open doorway, then sent the monster along its journey of devastation. The furnace door opened, and Megara stabbed forth its fiery power once more, and another tendril was cut off, another elemental birthed. This time, Ivanel used her magic to compel this one into obedience, to show it the enemies awaiting it, and send it sweeping along. And so it went, back and forth between the two women, fire elementals, fiery salamanders, living balls of flame, small but roiling, white-hot with their tremendous proportion of energy. All of these creatures of fire, bits of Megara, rushed along the prescribed path, the only tunnels open to them, hungry, even for living fuel. She found her breathing hard to come by, but she knew she couldn't falter here, with her connection to the creatures of the plane of fire. Catti Bree was sending them along with ease, one after the other, giving them that which they wanted, things to consume, to burn, to spread their fiery wings. When the oven door slammed closed for the last time, Evenel having reached her limit, and Catti Bree agreeing with an upraised hand as she too grew weary. The woman fell into different spells alongside the drow and dwarven priestesses and a trio of halfling wizards. Evenel led the ritual of her next spell, creating a great wind, combining their magical energies to focus the continuing gust, wind at the backs of the creatures of fire, adding to their strength, speeding their intended catastrophe. Howling winds whistled down the corridors, urging and feeding and pushing the living flames along. Reckless does not begin to describe your charge, Jarlaxle scolded Zacnaphane, who sat on a stone table, his wounds being treated by a pair of dwarven clerics.
5 major fiends sent home to the abyss, Zacnaphane replied. You think that not worth the risk?
I think our friends, your daughter by law in particular, have suffered one great loss. I don't want to pile another atop it.
Do you think they'd see me as such? Zack replied. She hardly knows me, and I'm not so sure she likes what she knows.
Probably not, Jarlaxle deadpanned. But let's not risk it.
Never a risk, the weapon master answered. Just some big birds and a 6-legged dog.
Jarlaxle managed to chuckle at that. The door banged open then, and a young dwarf poked her head in.
It's coming, she said, like a wave.
Jarlaxle nodded, having felt the warmth as soon as the door was opened.
Bear witness? He asked Zack.
Witness? I mean to chase the fire beasts down the hall. They won't kill everything, Zack replied.
He brushed back the attending dwarves and hopped from the table, pulling on the mithril shirt Catti Bree had given to him, then gathering his sword belt and strapping it on.
At least I hope they won't, and this blade is hungrier than I.
He finished, drawing Icing Death from its sheath. Down a short corridor, through a pair of rooms, then down another longer passageway, the pair came to an angled door as the corridor ended, the wall reaching farther on the right-hand side. This selected section of Gontalgrim had many angled intersections, the side corridors meeting the main hallway, like the low-hanging limbs of an evergreen. There the pair paused. For they could feel the intense heat on the other side, could see the flickering brightness of the living flames. The door, heavy, petrified wood, iron-banded, was smoking. Pull it open and move fast behind me, Jarlaxle instructed, pulling the giant feather from the band on his hat.
Planning to cook some bird? A surprised Zack asked. The firestorm hasn't swept past.
You don't think this feather has only one use, do you? The rogue replied. Trust me, Jarlaxle added when Zack stood staring.
The last words heard by so many of your old friends, said Zack.
The door, please, Jarlaxle returned. Zack stared a bit longer, then wrapped his hand with the edge of his heavy powafwi and gingerly reached for the bolts, holding the portal shut. He threw them open, then grabbed the pull ring and tugged the door open. Or tried to. For the rushing wind on the other side was so strong, the living flames eating all the air, that the portal was truly stuck.
Bah! But what are ye about then, ye bald-headed maker of chaos?
Came a voice from behind, and the two turned to see Athrogate rushing up, accompanied by some other dwarves.
Get that door open, Jarlaxle told him.
Not a good idea, said the black-haired dwarf.
Trust me, Jarlaxle said, and Athrogate snorted loudly.
Quite the reputation you've crafted, said Zack.
The bellows, the fires, the embers be flying, Athrogate crooned. Open the door and you're sure to be frying.
Just, Jarlaxle sighed and put his face in his hand. Athrogate roared at his successful rhyme, then rushed past the mercenary.
Get ye back, he told Zack, and he grabbed the door ring with a heavily gloved hand.
So you trust him then? Zack asked the dwarf. He lights like a candle, and it's his own doing, the dwarf answered.
Zacnaphane ran back to join the other dwarves, noting that one was dragging a large basket full of wood chips. Athrogate looked at Jarlaxle and nodded, then tugged on the ring. The door didn't budge. The dwarf turned to it, puzzled. The air on the other side, Jarlaxle started to explain, but then just shook his head and called the dwarf back. Caddy Bree and Ivanel must have cooked up a tremendous storm, he thought, if Athrogate, with his girdle of giant strength, couldn't open the door. Athrogate took up the door in both hands and tugged mightily, but it wouldn't move. He let go and kicked the heavy portal, grumbling, "Come on, then. I know another way." He rushed back past Jarlaxle, who was removing his hat and shaking his head. When Athrogate was safely behind him, Jarlaxle pulled his portable hole out from the hat and sent it spinning and widening at the portal. It hit flat against the door, immediately creating a wide hole in it, revealing the maelstrom beyond. Orange flame light brightened the tunnel. Beyond the door, the windstorm, the firestorm raged, rushing left to right before the startled onlookers. They noted individual elementals, salamanders of flame, and sweeping waves of burning embers. Jarlaxle shook himself from his awe, whispered to his feather implement, and began waving it before him.
"He think he's going to fly?" Athrogate asked Zack.
"A wind fan?" Zack asked, more to himself or to Jarlaxle than to the dwarf. "That's new."
"That one's always got a trick," Athrogate said, yelled, because now Jarlaxle too was creating a loud wind of his own, billowing out from him and distorting the flames weirdly as it joined the conflagration in the tunnel beyond.
Athrogate and his dwarf companions hoisted the large basket and rushed up beside the drow, heaving their payload into Jarlaxle's windstorm. The embers flew forth, blown into the corridor, into the flames, where they ignited immediately and were swept away.
"Not new," Jarlaxle replied to Zack's observation. "Only new to you."
Zack could only shake his head, no longer surprised by anything regarding Jarlaxle. At the base of the long hallway, a few steps back of the side corridor through which the creatures of the Plane of Fire were entering, teams of dwarves worked bellows of various sizes, spewing their gusts into the main tunnel to join with Caddy Bree and Ivanel's maelstrom, fanning the flames as the fire monsters charged into the main hallway, boosting them on their way with powerful tailwinds. Far away along the same passage, the demons were coming, large and small, but mostly small, the fodder of this attack force, leading the major fiends in a charge that had already brought them much farther into the complex than they had known before. The leading fiends, mains mostly, felt the rising heat, but it meant nothing to the barely thinking shock troops. Their lead groups rambled around a long bend right as the living permutations of the vomit of the Great Forge swept forward from the other direction. More like a flood of water rolling through a forest than stones striking a solid barrier, the fire elementals washed right past the mains, sweeping all about them, igniting them, turning them into animated torches. In the passing wave of fire, those lesser fiends melted and fell, desiccated skin curling and burning. Shrieks of protest filled the corridor, diminishing as the mains fast fell to the hot stone floor into piles of charred bone and ash, blowing about as smoke in the wind of the firestorm. The elementals fed and grew and raged and charged on.
It knew.
Megara understood the deception of Caddy Bree. She heard it in her mind. For as she had reached into the primordial's being to coax it forth, the brilliant godlike creature had quietly reached back. Now, as the spellcasters about her continued their wind ritual, Caddy Bree faltered, stumbling in the cacophony of thoughts and protests from the beast. She understood the true power of Megara then, brilliant and horrifying, and the anger. If her time in the pit had shown her the physical strength of the primordial, this new event revealed to her something even more terrifying. This was no circus bear performing. No. Caddy Bree realized then that she was the performing animal against the likes of Megara. Compulsions came swirling about her to open the oven fully, to close the levers in the adjoining chasm room, and dismiss the water elementals, to side with Megara, only Megara, and share in the beauty of fiery destruction and thus fiery creation. In only a brief moment, Caddy Bree saw the multiverse through the eyes and desires of Megara, and that mere instant wobbled her knees and sent her determined spellcasting to gibberish. She was just a human, after all, a mortal being who could not begin to comprehend the truth of Megara. In her failure, she revealed her limitations, and those limitations brought new sensations from the primordial. It was disappointed in her. It had no use for her. It was angry at her for teasing forth its tendrils for her own use. Now Megara promised retribution. Catti Bree had taken a piece from it, and so it would take a piece from her. Catti Bree had stolen Megara's children, the birthed elementals, and so Megara. She grew hot and began to shiver. She knew that her face was turning red, the heat within. The woman felt a sting in her mind, in her heart, in her womb. She heard a splatter below and looked down, her head spinning to see blood between her feet. Curiously, she never lost focus on that blood as she went down hard onto the stone floor, all strength flying from her, all hope flying with it. The whirling fire swept along the corridors, melting the lesser fiends, wounding the greater demons, and behind the maelstrom came a second, this one of muscle and mithril, of mortal flesh and singing voices. With the wind at their backs and King Brunner in the lead, the sweating dwarves charged down tunnels still glowing with residual heat. Soles melting on their heavy boots, the dwarves nevertheless kept up their run. They fought for their home, for their kin, for their king. Few demons remained alive in the wake of the firestorm, and under heavy boots, the dwarves stamped into smoke those fiends still clinging to their tethers to the material plane. But as they moved farther along, the corridors grew cooler. The numbers of charred demons diminished, with more living fiends remaining to take up the fight. Brunner, or more accurately, Brunner's many-notched axe, led the way willingly, cracking the skull of a Glabrezu, shearing the bill from a Vrock. When they came to intersections or forks, the dwarven force, tidally separated, predetermined strike teams running their routes in corridors Clan Battlehammer called home. They were fighting every step, but they were climbing higher in the complex, blasting through demons half-killed by the living primordial vomit. "Grabbers!" Brunner yelled when his lead team came to the middle of a large, high-ceilinged room whose ladders were all up or missing altogether. Teams of dwarves with grappling hooks let fly, catching their barbs on the circular stairwell some 20 feet up. Brunner was the first to a rope, tugging himself skyward, powerfully, hand over hand. When he got to the ladder and stair platform high above, he was surprised, even as he was not, to see Jarlaxle and Zacnaphane already looking down at him from on high, urging him and his fellows on. More dead demons, several major fiends among them, greeted Brunner when he arrived in the corridor of the next level. The walls and floor here were cool. If the fire elementals had made it this far, they had little left to offer, for the skin of the fallen fiends was not burned. Slashed and stabbed, but not burned.
"How long ye been up here?"
the dwarf king asked Jarlaxle. "Fine plan," the drow answered. "The living flame stole the fodder from our enemy."
"Ye didn't answer my question."
"Not long," Jarlaxle replied.
"That one fights like his son," Athrogate explained, coming out of a room, a large and misshapen husk of a melting demon on the floor of the side chamber behind him.
Brunner looked across the wide room and down the hallway beyond, all of it strewn with dead demons, the air filling with smoke as their corpses melted away to nothingness, Jarlaxle's huge diatrima bird walking among the dissipating corpses, pecking at them. On the far end, he spotted the black form of Guinevar, crouched and looking farther along, her back hunched, rear legs tamping. The dwarf shook his head and harumphed.
"To the throne room?" Jarlaxle asked.
"Can't think of a better place for me to be,"
Brunner answered. On they charged, now led by Gwen, overrunning pockets of demons. Soon enough, they were met by more and more dwarf strike teams coming out of the side corridors, almost all showing signs of recent battle. For all of their success, it had not been easy. Clan Battlehammer had more than a few fallen heroes that day, and a lot more than a few wounded. But now the goal was in sight, and the dwarven army rolled on eagerly, accepting the losses, knowing they were for the greater good. There were fewer side chambers up here, fewer alternate corridor routes, and the progress increased into a focused, roaring, shield-thumping charge. The dwarves banged their swords, their axes, their maces, their hammers, and stomped their boots,
many with souls misshapen from the heat of the lower corridors. They sang, they banged, they cheered, they fought, they died. But on they rolled. Into the throne room they rolled, right into the arms of a demon horde. But they did not waver and they did not falter. And as dawn broke on the surface, now not so far above, King Brunner Battlehammer once more sat on the throne of the dwarven gods.
"Give me your strength, Clangadin Silverbeard," he called to the god of war. "Give me your whispers of hidden truths," he implored Dumathoin, the keeper of secrets under the mountain. "Give me your heart, and let me boys know you're with me," he prayed to Moradin, the All-Father.
The great entry hall loomed right outside. The drow and demons and abominable driders held it. Brunner wanted it back. He felt the answer of his gods, all three, in the form of strength flowing into his limbs, and the dwarf king who leaped from the throne of the dwarven gods was much larger than the one who had sat upon it.
"Forward!" Brunner yelled in a voice blessed by his gods.
The others knew it, and how they cheered, and how they charged, swarming out into the entry cavern of Gontalgrim, taking the beach on the near side of the pond, taking the bridge in short order, driving the demons back, back, back. He had to tell Brunner of the happenings outside of Gontalgrim. Thibaldorf Puent focused on that thought, that duty. As he floated back among the corridors held by dwarves, a gaseous cloud hiding in cracks and staying flat against the ceiling, seeming no more than some residual smoke of the burning furnaces or of the perpetual steam from the primordial chasm. Many times did the dwarf pause on his journey, or retreat or throw himself through a crack into another side chamber, for nearly every dwarf he saw, and surely those he recognized, called to him, to his loneliness, to his hunger. It would be so easy for him to create companions. He had to tell Brunner of the happenings outside of Gontalgrim, of the gathering drow. In the forge room at last, Puent was glad to see Catti Bree, thinking he must therefore be close to Brunner. He looked around, noting the dwarven priests and priestesses, noting the drow woman, Ivanel. One priestess in particular caught his eye, a striking woman named Coppetta. Copperhead, the vampire thought, for that was the nickname Puent had given her years before because of her long and thick golden red hair, and also because she could strike as swiftly as a snake whenever the battle rager got out of line with her. The other dwarves called her Penny, a common old Delzoon name for the copper bit coins. To Puent, though, she would always be Copperhead. Long had Puent fancied this lass. Seeing her now was almost more than he could take. Nay, perhaps it was more than he could take, and the vampire began plotting. If she walked out of the room, or even out of sight of the main gathering, he would transform and sink his fangs into her neck. He would take her hand and fly away. She would be like him. They would be together forevermore. Copperhead. Puent could feel her soft touch, could hear again her sharp wit, could smell the blood. Yes, most of all, he could smell the blood. Her blood, he believed, waiting for his kiss. He felt himself descending from the ceiling, out of the smoke of the forges. The smell of blood grew thicker, calling to him, telling him that it was time for him to surrender at long last, to accept his fate, to take a companion, or many companions. The blood, so sweet. Then he saw. No, it was not Copperhead's blood at all. It was Catti Bree's, between her feet, running down the insides of her legs. Catti Bree fell to the floor, blood soaked into her gown about her crotch. The drow ran to her, the dwarves ran to her. Ivanel began yelling orders, but Puent couldn't hear, not then, not watching his dear princess of Mithril Hall falling, not smelling the blood. The blood. They carried Catti Bree away. Puent hovered there above the red puddle, not knowing what to do, not knowing right from wrong. Perhaps he should go to Catti Bree and take her into Undeath to save her. Yes, to save her. But no, that could not be right, the confused dwarf insisted.
Did he even know right from wrong anymore? Did he know where Puent ended and the vampire began? Where duty and honor ended and desire demanded? The notion that he had even truly considered inflicting his curse upon dear Catti Bree shamed the dwarf. He flew from the forge room, down the small side corridor, and into the great steamy chamber that held the primordial chasm. Once before, he had thrown himself into that chasm, along with a giant spider construct, thinking to save his beloved King Brunner and end his torment all at once. But he had flown back out, and now again he failed. The vampire curse would not let him destroy himself. Every passing day made it stronger. He had thought to bite Catti Bree, the daughter of King Brunner. He flew from the chamber, through the forge room and along the halls. He knew where they were going, knew Catti Bree's chambers, and there he found the woman in her bed, surrounded by clerics, Copperhead among them, the drow Evenel among them. He watched as they worked frantically, many casting spells upon the woman, who seemed so near to death. Evenel too cast, but it wasn't a spell of healing, more of divination, and the vampire Puent could sense the strength of her magic, and he recoiled, fearing that she was magically searching for him. But no. She rushed to Catti Bree and took up the woman's hand and began tugging insistently, violently even. She fell back a step, holding up a ring, Catti Bree's ring, which she slipped upon her own finger. Evenel closed her eyes and began chanting insistently in a language the vampire dwarf did not know, and one, judging from the looks of those around, foreign to the dwarven clerics as well. When she finished, she moved through them back to Catti Bree and began spellcasting once more, waggling her fingers above the woman's face, creating water that fell and splashed upon her, then leaning low and blowing a frosty breath behind the magical rain, as if she was trying to physically cool Catti Bree. Puent didn't understand, nor did those other dwarves about, clearly, but soon enough, the Princess of Mithril Hall seemed to be resting more comfortably, and the dwarves sighed and nodded one after the other. Puent simply hovered, fighting his compulsions, trying not to smell the blood, trying to not look at Copperhead, beautiful Copperhead. She could be like he was, eternal. The vampire slipped out of the room. He had to tell Brunner of the happenings outside of Gontogrim. But where was Brunner? Puent didn't fly away. He couldn't fly away. Catti Bree, Copperhead, sweet, sweet blood. The malevolence she felt through the ring surprised Evenel, not because of the strength of it, but because of the manner. It wasn't anger, but simply annoyance, a person slapping a bug that had stung it and nothing more. There was no sense of remorse, not a whit of conscience or regret. Megara had slapped Catti Bree back for her trick. The beast had somehow put some of its very essence into the woman and created with that a fever of dramatic proportions, a fever strong enough to harm her child, perhaps, or to permanently damage Catti Bree, to kill them both, likely. Megara was feeding it through the ring, and now, too, Evenel could feel herself growing warm. Evenel didn't remove the ring, however, for she, unlike Catti Bree, was forewarned. She battled back and cooled the primordial warmth. "Will she live?" one of the dwarves asked Evenel. "Aye, and what of the baby then?" asked another, a dwarf woman with striking reddish-brown hair. "Keep working over her," was all that Evenel could offer, for she really didn't know. "I think the muffin's still kicking," said the priestess Copetta. Evenel offered a hopeful grin at that and put her hand beside Copetta's on the woman's belly. Indeed, she felt a kick and could only hope it was not one of distress. "I need to study more powerful spells of healing," Evenel told the dwarf. "I wasn't expecting anything like this today." "Aye, just a bunch of living flame balls to send rushing through the tunnels, eh?" "Aye," Evenel answered. "We'll be giving her plenty of the healing," Copetta told her. "Good thinking on the water and cold. Seems her fever's a lot down." "Down, but not gone," Evenel added, moving her hand up to Catti Bree's sweaty and clammy forehead. "We might be needing to take the babe," Copetta said. Ivanel only had experience with such things through the memories of Matron Mother Ivanel the Eternal, but she took some solace in the apparent confidence and competence of these very capable dwarves. She looked about the room for a place to take some rest, to regenerate her magical energy, and to prepare some powerful spells. She had thought to go off in pursuit of the fight she and Catti Bree had started, to aid in driving the demons as far back as possible, but that wouldn't take her from this woman right now. She moved into the anteroom and was surprised to find Artemis and Trary and Dahlia coming into the room through the opposite door.
"The blood," Entreri said, rushing up to the drow. "They say it was Catti Bree's."
Ivanel nodded. "She is resting." She stepped back and took a long look at the human and his half-elven companion. Both were battered, covered in demon gore and blood, likely their own. "You seem as if resting would do you some good as well," Ivanel said.
"We just left the upper corridors for exactly that," Dahlia answered. "The demons are in retreat, the dwarves pressing for the throne room, perhaps already there."
"We were fighting through the day, before the firestorm," Entreri explained. "Our enemies are infinite."
"We nearly walked into that firestorm," Dahlia added. "We were returning through other tunnels and were not forewarned."
"The heat was enough of a warning," Entreri quickly added. "Pray give me some healing," he added. "And some magic to bolster my weary arms, I beg. I want to be with them when the fiends are driven from Gontalgrim."
"With them?" Ivanel asked.
"With Jarlaxle and Zacnafane," Entreri answered. "With Brunner and Regis, with Catti Bree too, so I thought."
"With your friends," Ivanel said. Entreri looked at her curiously. "Are you afraid to admit the truth of the word?" Ivanel teased. "Or do you not understand the meaning?" That brought a laugh from Entreri, but a scowl from his companion. "It is a good word, Artemis Entreri," Ivanel said. "The more familiar you become with it, the greater the chances for you to escape the fate you were shown. More than that, familiarity with the word will enhance your life, something you deserve more than you're ready to admit." His face looked pained at that, but also held a sense of wonder, as if the thought had never dawned on him. Smiling gently, Ivanel said, "If you will excuse me now, I must rest and prepare more spells to help Catti Bree. She is in distress. The primordial struck at her and brought a fever."
"How bad?" Entreri asked with obvious concern.
"She is comfortable now. We don't know the damage, but the priests are working tirelessly, as will I." Entreri nodded. Ivanel returned it, then moved for a cot in the far corner of the room, but paused, noting a strange, steam-like cloud up in the corner rim of the ceiling, sliding through a crack from this anteroom into Catti Bree's bedchamber. Most might have mistaken it for simple smoke or mist. Certainly, there was much of that floating about these reaches of Gontalgrim, particularly after the efforts in the forge room. A quick minor dwyamer, though, confirmed Ivanel's suspicions. She rushed past the two in the room with her and charged back through the door, and Trary and Dahlia close behind.
"What is it, Catti Bree?"
And Trary asked, nearly running over Ivanel just inside the room.
"Take form, Vampire Puent," Ivanel called up to the cloud.
It shifted, then began to drift back toward the crack in the ceiling from which it had emerged. Ivanel threw a spell at it, one to steal the magic of the shape-shifting, and sure enough, the cloud coalesced, and Thibbledorf Puent materialized in midair. He dropped like a stone halfway to the floor before magically catching himself and slowing, turning weirdly in the air so that he touched down lightly upon the floor facing the drow woman. The others in the room all gasped, some calling to their old friend, one in particular even coming forward a step, until another warned her back with,
"Penny, no!"
"You're not wanting me here, lady," Puent warned,
grinding his teeth with every word and displaying his long fangs prominently.
"Not now, I tell ye."
"You came here uninvited," Ivanel reminded.
"Got to see me king,"
Puent said to Ivanel, but his eyes were not on the drow, she noted. No. He was staring across the room to the dwarf lass named Coppetta.
Got to tell him,
Pwent went on, his voice fading in and out around several low growls, part feral, part pure desire.
Thibbledorf Pwent, Evenel said, trying to make him focus. And he did focus, but not on her, launching himself across the room in a great spring, half leap and half flight, descending over poor Coppetta and bearing her to the ground beneath him. The other dwarves presented their holy symbols, denying the vampire, trying to drive him off with their divine energy. But most prominent among those presentations was the simple force of Evenel. As much to her own surprise as to any other who might notice, Evenel did not lift the spider-shaped symbol of Lolf, but simply stabbed her pointed finger at the cursed, undead thing. Pwent looked over his shoulder at her, hissed, and showed his fangs, then spun back and opened wide his mouth, descending upon the neck of his helpless victim. No, not his victim, his lover. He noted Entreri drawing his red-bladed sword and that jeweled dagger charging at him. Up he leaped to face the threat, but before Entreri got near, the drow priestess struck. I deny you, Evenel said. You were not invited here. If she had launched Pwent from a side-slinger catapult, he would not have flown more forcefully. He was thrown from his intended victim, smashing hard against the side wall of the room, halfway up. And there he held as if stuck, as if Evenel's pointing finger was some kind of energy ray pressing him in place. Evenel recognized the magic she was enacting here, for it was the same as that of the dwarves. She was using the power of divinity to turn the undead creature. Yet she wasn't. Because she wasn't invoking the name or symbol of the Lady Lolf. She almost questioned that, given the effect on the vampire, paralyzed and being seared by holy energy against that wall. Yield, she demanded. Pwent growled at her. Yield, Evenel answered a continuing growl by reminding him. You had news for your king. Your king, Thibbledorf Pwent. The dwarf's snarl melted. He turned his head and let Evenel's divine power press it against the stone. I, he gasped, gaining some measure of control. Evenel let him go, and he dropped hard to the floor, bouncing right back into a crouch and growling at her with unmasked hatred. But it was mixed with profound embarrassment. Everyone in the room understood. Thibbledorf Pwent, she said to him. Remember where you are. Remember who you are. The dwarf's expression softened even more. You need to see King Brunner, Evenel reminded. Pwent growled and gasped. Me? King? He managed to fight out through his wild desires and anger. Why? Evenel demanded. Why do you need to see him? You must tell me.
Me? King?
The Dark Elves? Evenel asked. Is it about the Dark Elves? Even Evenel was surprised at the effect of her guess, as if the reminder hit the mark perfectly on Pwent. He went from his crouch to a sitting position against the wall, lowered his arms and his gaze.
They're outside. All of them,
a thoroughly defeated Pwent said.
They're meaning to join together.
Evenel took a deep breath. This was her worst fear coming true. The battered dwarves would have no chance against the combined might of Menzo Berenzon, not after the energy and blood they had already expended in battling the demons. Evenel had no idea of why the news surprised her, though. Of course Quenthal and the others had come to join in the glory Matron Jindium Alarn was beginning to realize. What else could it have been? Show me, she told the vampire. You will take me out there and show me.
Is that what you're thinking, then?
Pwent asked skeptically. For your King Brunner, Thibbledorf Pwent, Evenel replied flatly. I might be able to stop this. And if I cannot, then woe to Gontalgrim and woe to King Brunner. She glanced at the bed. And woe to Catti Bree. and the child of Driss Doerden, she added. For the power of Gontalgrim alone will not win the day here. You know it. You've seen them. How many drow soldiers, how many slave fodder? Pwent growled at that. Show me, Evenel demanded. Capetta moved up beside the drow, stealing the bluster from the vampire.
Thibbledorf Pwent, she said. My old Thibble. It's me, Penny.
Copperhead, Pwent mouthed, and the dwarf lass smiled.
Aye, your own Copperhead, she answered sweetly. You must do as the drow asks, for all your kith and kin.
The vampire's face softened even more as he stared at the woman. At long last, he turned his gaze to Evenel and offered a slight nod of agreement.
I'm going with you, Artemis and Treri told Evenel.
No, said Dahlia in surprise.
I cannot guarantee your safety or my own, Evenel told him.
No one ever has, and Treri answered, but I'm coming with you.
Evenel considered it a moment, then nodded. The room began to shake then, so violently that more than one of the gathering stumbled, and one of the dwarves even fell over.
We've not much time, Evenel warned. We have stolen the explosive pressure from Megara, but it will build again and quickly. Megara knows that it will soon escape.
Her words, meant to rouse the others, particularly Pwent, to action, sounded hollow to her. They were true enough, of course. She could feel it keenly through her ring. Catty Bree's ploy had bought them a bit of time, perhaps, but little more. Megara would escape. And there was nothing even Evenel Bayenri could do to stop it.